The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get frustrated when you hear people call America a Christian country. Well, my friend, although the Puritans did settle in America for the purpose of creating an all-Christian colony, it's true that by the time we made our Declaration of Independence, which was almost some 200 years later, we had become a much different nation than the Puritans envisioned, one that does not mandate religion. However, our Constitution, while allowing a religious freedom, while allowing religious choice, or the choice to not be religious at all, was still based upon Judeo-Christian principles. And anybody who tells you otherwise is either twisting history or is ignorant of history. Now, I'll admit, we don't see these Judeo-Christian principles in action much anymore, at least not from the people seeking to hold our highest office. Well, some of them, but not too many. And one of the ones with more integrity, Justice Scalia, as you know, just passed away. The nation is in shock. So I'm going to talk about the election, but I'm going to have to pretend for a moment that the election even matters anymore. I'm going to have to pretend that we're still a republic and a democracy instead of an oligarchy that's going to be ruled by a majority liberal court, which calls the Constitution a living, breathing document code for, if I don't like something in the Constitution, I'll change it. But anyway, let's just pretend for a moment that the election still matters. Hillary, gotta love Hillary. She keeps touting experience as her qualification. Yes, she does indeed have a record of public service, and therein lies the problem. But Governor Chris Christie, no longer in the race, went out with a bang trying to create a problem for Senator Marco Rubio. Christie kept talking about Rubio's scripted repetitiveness. Oh, like the amount of times Christie gives a speech about the experience of governors, that kind of script. That kind of repetition. Now, in the debate that we had a week ago, I know we had another one last night, but in the one they had a week ago, Rubio did repeat three times that Obama knows exactly what he's doing to our country. He didn't make that alleged mistake in last night's debate. People said he did much better, but here's the thing. I don't believe it was a mistake the first time. It happens to be true. He should have repeated it four times. He should say it every time he speaks. Now, people have been trying to warn us about Obama's agenda right from the beginning. And you know who gives him the biggest benefit of the doubt? Who's been giving him the biggest benefit of the doubt all these years? Conservatives! Even Rubio himself, during the 2012 Republican convention, said, "I don't believe Obama is a bad person, just a bad president." I'm sorry, but I'll say it. The man is a bad person. He cast a vote for infanticide, been forced to take a position on the Illinois Infant Protection Act. Not abortion, infanticide. Now, what part of that do you not understand, ladies and gentlemen? A man who will do that will do anything. And since then, Obama has proven that because he's done much. But many of my fellow conservatives refused to call things as they were. For example, way back a number of years ago in a 2010 article for Town Hall, conservative radio talk show host Michael Medved challenged any of his fellow conservatives who would paint President Obama as a socialist. Okay, look, before I go on, I like Michael Medved. I'm a big fan. He's been a guest twice on this program, and I was honored to have him. This happens to be one of the few areas where we disagree, and we disagree only on strategy, not the issue itself. But much of Medved's admonition to not call Obama a socialist had to do with how this would sound as opposed to how true the assertion was. Supposedly, a bad sound from conservatives would more than likely be rejected by the majority of Americans, thus assuring President Obama another term. Here are some of Michael Medved's words from that 2010 article. He says, and I quote, "Hysterical rhetoric about socialist takeover and looming dictatorship will lead the public to fear conservatives more than they fear the president." In this same article, Medved went on to chastise those who make an issue out of Obama's birth certificate or suggest that he's really a Muslim or perhaps the Antichrist. Such a list provides a good example of what we would call guilt by association. Those other issues on the list are indeed nonsense. But the allegation that Obama is a socialist happens to be true. When socialist is added to the list of false accusations, it tends to look every bit as false. And so the argument becomes muddy and deceptive. I don't believe Medved is deliberately trying to deceive, but the argument he puts forth has the kind of flaw that makes it deceptive in its effect. In any event, Mitt Romney was about as moderate as they come, and he treated Obama with kid gloves. How did that work out? Meanwhile, the only real argument against Obama being a socialist is that he has managed to avoid describing himself by that lightning-charged word. Still, as the old saying goes, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Throughout Obama's first term, from his health care plan to his EPA regulations to a whole host of other policies, a fair question was being asked by many frustrated conservatives. If this man doesn't champion government redistribution of wealth, who does? Well, actually, we now have an answer to that question. Bernie Sanders. Yeah, good old Bernie. Bernie makes no bones about being a socialist. In fact, he revels in the term. Certainly, Bernie has been talking this way for quite some time, but now it's catching on. Why? Because the times have changed. Americans have gotten so used to the stench of socialism, they can barely smell its potent odor anymore. A recent Gallup poll shows that 47% of Americans would have no trouble voting for a socialist. Among other Americans, Bernie Sanders is connecting with college students who enjoy hearing the word free, especially in regards to college tuition. And why not? Everybody loves a Santa Claus. What Bernie fails to explain is that a lot of middle-class elves are being financially strangled in order to pay for this sleigh full of free goodies. If these same students experience the other side of socialism, they would see it differently. Excuse me, professor. As I look at my math test, it seems I scored a 99. That would be an A, wouldn't it?
Well, normally, yes.
Well, then, professor, why did I get a C?
A good question. You see, some of your classmates are not as fortunate as you. They scored much lower. Some earned D's. Some even got an F. And so, to be fair, I am just going to give everybody a C.
Actually, an economics professor in Texas tried an experiment very much like this. I don't have to tell you it did not go over well with the students. Why? Because truth is a hard pill to swallow. But you see, America at large is not being forced to suddenly swallow a pill. Our situation is better compared to the frog that was boiled slowly. A gradual increase in temperature kept the frog comfortable with familiar water. By the time he realized he was going to burn to death, it was too late. Back in the year 2010, when there was still time to cry out the accusation of socialism, it may have sounded, as Medved put it, hysterical. It doesn't sound hysterical anymore, because now the idea of socialism taking over a country founded upon freedom just doesn't seem so bad anymore. Perhaps it's time to take a look at other rising water temperatures while we still have the ability to control the thermostat. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Thank you.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, co-hosting the show with me today, as he does roughly once a month, my good friend Jim Barrier, calling from San Antonio, Texas. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it is so good to be with you again, and I loved your opening monologue there. I want to make some comments about that.
By all means.
You said most of the things. You'd say something, and I'm thinking, oh, I got to say this, and then 30 seconds later, you'd say what I wanted to say. But
well, Jim, that's why I'm the host, and you're the co-host.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And before we go any further, folks, I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here may not necessarily reflect those of Bob Siegel, KCBQ, and or the Salem Broadcasting Network. So I wanted to get that out of the way.
Yeah, well, the views that are expressed here are definitely going to reflect me, unfortunately.
So. Well, we've tried to disagree on some things.
Yeah, and we don't do it too well. Well, even when we try to disagree, it's very amiable, and we usually agree on more than we disagree.
I think I agree with that. So here's a thought, and especially when you're talking about the notion of people, the controversy of whether this is a Christian nation and all of those things, there's so much rhetoric on both sides of the fence. You have no doubt heard this quote, "America is great because America is good." Are you familiar with that one?
I have heard that. I don't recall who coined it, though.
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, good. Well, see, well, then maybe you should become the host.
Well, been there, done that. Alexis de Tocqueville, who was a French historian in the 1800s, made that quote. And that line has been used a lot. I've heard it a lot. What I'm going to share with you now, so take a minute, but I'm going to give you a larger portion from the article that statement comes from. Listen to this.
Well, just hearing anything good from France is worth paying attention to.
Well, this will change your whole thinking about their history. "I sought for the key to greatness and genius of America in her harbors, in her fertile fields and boundless forests, in her rich mines and vast world commerce, in her public school system and institutions of learning. I sought for it in her democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution. Not until I went to the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. The safeguard of morality is religion, and morality is the best security of law, as well as the surest pledge of freedom. The Americans combine the notions of Christianity and liberty so intimately in their minds that it is impossible to make them conceive the one without the other. Christianity is the companion of liberty in all its conflicts, the cradle of its infancy, and the divine source of its claims." From a French historian.
You've just done the impossible. You've given me a Frenchman other than Inspector Clouseau to start quoting.
Well, and this would come in second, of course, to Cousin.
Do you have a Zoom?
That's my Doug. Okay.
I thought you said you had Doug and did not bite.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, here's why I brought this up tonight, Bob. There is a candidate who keeps blabbing, "Let's make America great again."
Yeah, you mean the candidate who says his book is second only to the Bible, that candidate?
Yeah. Have you, I have not heard, but have you heard that candidate say anything like, "Let's make America good again," or "Let's bring America back to the notion that Christianity and liberty are intimately entwined," or "That Christianity is the companion of liberty"?
Yeah. The only I don't know if you heard the show I did on Trump or read the article I wrote about him, but if he runs against Hillary, he's a man who could do anything. Against Hillary or Bernie, I'll roll the dice and go with Trump. But other than that, I can't say anything good about him. The man could end up doing anything. He could do some great things. He could do some horrible things. He's all over the map. He certainly has no humility. He's very much like President Obama in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's like I've compared him to that 11th hour doctor who gives a cancer patient this drug and says, "I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm saying we better try it." If he ends up being the candidate, I'd much rather have a Cruz or a Rubio or somebody like that. I would have rather had Carson, but I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
I think we're really after the last debates.
He was my favorite. Ben Carson was my favorite, but I wish he had gained more traction.
But I think we're down to four candidates at this point that are going to fight it out. But all of that, my point is I have friends that are serious Trumpeters. They're all over this guy.
Well, he's channeling their anger and their frustration with the establishment that betrays them. So it's very understandable, but I still want them to think and to not say anything Trump says, "I'm going to follow him right or wrong." That's just locking in step. That's not really accomplishing anything.
Yeah. Well, I get that it's more the anger and the people are sick and tired of things.
He's a populist.
But the whole point of making America great cannot be separated from America being good and moral. And I fear, now I'm a bit cynical. I'm one of those that is afraid that we have hit the slippery slope. And I will be fair to say that the only hope that I have anymore for this nation is not in a candidate that I like or agree with. Our only hope is a true revival of spiritual renewal, such as we have seen in the days of the New England revivals or the Welsh revivals or some of those great times that really changed the culture. The little feel-good things, I've been to most of them around the country, the little pockets of things that happen, they're not revival because they haven't produced any transformation of the culture.
Yeah, I agree with you. Short of a miracle, we're on a road without any turns. And God is going to look first to see what the church is doing. I do want to clarify for our audience, though, that when we talk about goodness coming from the church, you got to put that in the context of the more detailed theology we give in other programs. Neither Jim or I believe we are good people, other than the fact that we've turned from our sin, given our lives to Jesus Christ, and by His grace and His Spirit, we can aspire to become more. But Christians don't consider themselves to be better than everybody else. We consider ourselves to be forgiven and on a road that God sometimes drags us down kicking and screaming. But if we want to define goodness as that, then that's a different story.
I agree with all of that. And at the same time, goodness is one of the things listed in the fruit of the Spirit.
Yes,
goodness
exactly.
Is one of the attributes of God. And the truth is, it goes back to Old English language. Goodness means godliness. And so
the word good actually comes from the word God.
Exactly. So if we are Christians, which comes from the word Christ, we should be little anointed ones, and we should imitate Him and do our best to be good. So there are extremes in all of these things. No, I don't think I'm any better than any of the drug addicts or alcoholics that I tend to every Wednesday night that come to my church. I don't think I'm any better than the hooker on the street or the corrupt politician. But
you are at least better than disco, though, Jim. I can at least tell you you're better than that.
Thanks. I need everything I can get.
Yeah, you're better than the Donnie and Marie show was. You're better than disco. There's a couple of things you're better than.
Well,
oh, my wife is frowning. She loved the Donnie and Marie show. Oh, boy, am I. And I'm going to hear about this on Valentine's Day, too.
Well, we can go, you know, and I was not a big Osmond fan, but that's okay. That's okay. So I wanted to get that off my chest there, because I'm just tired of hearing this. People toss words around, and nobody does it better than politicians running for office. They just use words so easily.
And they're such hypocrites. Everything they accuse the other person of doing, they're doing themselves, you know.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it's just driving me crazy. I really can't watch the debates too much, because I just get more angry. And I'm going to have to vote. I've voted every election since I turned 18. I have voted, and I will vote this time. I won't tell you who I'm going to vote for, because I don't know, frankly. I'm going to wait and see what happens in South Carolina, because I think that's going to whittle it down a little further. Making the obvious obvious. I'm not going to vote for Bernie or Hillary. That's probably pretty clear here. But forever, you know, what's going to happen in the Republican Party? I keep losing hope that there's going to be anybody I can really put my heart behind.
Right. But although sometimes we have to vote the lesser two evils, even if we're really not putting our heart behind it. Wouldn't that be true?
Or as a man that mentored me used to say, the lesser of two liberals. But
Well, let me ask you a question. I alluded to this quickly on the program.
Yeah.
With the passing of Justice Scalia, does it even matter anymore? Supposing our favorite conservative candidate won, what difference does it make if we're not going to have five liberals on the Supreme Court?
Well, that's why they need to put off any appointment. They need to filibuster. I can't believe I'm saying that, but they cannot allow this guy to put another one.
Yeah,
on
well, what
bench.
I can't believe is that the Republicans will have the spine to do it. Well, hold on with me
we'll
over the
see.
Break. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Looking for a new book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel, joined by my good friend Jim Barrier. Jim, welcome back.
Thanks, and that's Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass playing.
I knew you would get that one. You know, I've replaced a lot of the bumper music over the years on my show. That one's been
I'm
there
so
from
glad.
The beginning. I don't think I'll ever replace that one. That one is one of my favorites.
Well, and Herb Alpert, the A in Alpert is the A in A&M Records, by the way.
That's right. The old LPs.
He's a gazillionaire.
Did you know vinyl is making kind of a comeback? I'm actually seeing vinyl records sold in Barnes & Noble stores.
I know. Vinyl made a comeback. Tie-dye made a comeback. I will not wear bell-bottoms. I'm sorry. Okay. I had a topic I wanted to talk about, but I'm having too much fun talking about these things here. And I wanted to go back to the Scalia thing. It could play into the hands of the right Republican candidate if he can make that an issue and say, folks, this is critical. We need someone who will put a conservative, someone who will who believes in the Constitution, that it is not a seriously flawed document. And someone, if there's someone clever enough, and I believe there may be, they could use that as a tool to pull ahead. Do you remember a fellow named Francis Schaeffer?
Oh, of course.
I had the privilege of sitting in a week-long seminar with Dr. Schaeffer, and he was...
Absolutely brilliant man.
Really, and he addressed Americans, and he said, you Americans get so concerned about who's going to be president, and you don't understand that the real threat is the Supreme Court.
Absolutely, because the Supreme Court is not given the power anywhere in the Constitution to interpret the Constitution, and that's what people don't seem to understand.
But that's what they're doing now, and I think Scalia himself talked about the irony of having nine people who are not elected that have such power, and so the main reason that the person who gets elected president is important is because he makes appointments to that court. So in that sense, I think the events of the recent hours here of losing the Judge Scalia is really throws a big monkey wrench into the works here. I don't think Obama will succeed in running an appointment through, because I think the Republicans will do to whoever he suggests the same way the Democrats fought so many of the conservative justices, and I think they can put it off.
Well, I hope you're right. They certainly have the right to. I'm hearing all the Democrats say, look, our Constitution says that he's still president and he can still nominate somebody. That's true. But that same Constitution says that the Senate does not have to go along with it. The problem is our Republican House and Senate, but it's even more true, and the Senate does not have a track record for doing anything but caving into Obama. All that guy's got to do is get up at the bully pulpit, give one of those idiotic speeches about bipartisanship and the need for bipartisanship. Bipartisanship, of course, being defined as the Republicans doing everything 100% exactly his way.
Right.
And they cave in. I mean, I know Mitch McConnell came out and said we should wait for the next president. I don't think they're going to do it. I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong, yeah. But I don't think they have the spine. They have a... Now, if Cruz and Rubio were smart with all the talk about how they've been away from the Senate too much campaigning, they should get off the campaign trail for a while and go back to the Senate and say, if I have to have less town hall meetings and less debates, I'm going to go back and I'm going to fight this thing. And if I succeed in fighting it as a senator at the expense of my campaign, so be it, because I love my country that much. That kind of sacrifice, ironically, would probably give the presidency to one of them. I don't think it's going to happen, though. I don't think. I mean, I could maybe picture Cruz trying it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I hope that it does. You're as cynical as I am, Bob, but I think if there's a glimmer of hope in that, that would be it. Of course, that also leaves us, until someone is appointed and ratified and everything, then you have an eight-person panel.
Then it goes back to the lower courts, and some of those lower courts our current issues have made some pretty decent rulings. So that wouldn't really be that bad.
We will see what happens. But
the real problem is that our courts shouldn't have had this much power in the first place. It shouldn't matter whether we have a Democratic or Republican president to appoint somebody, because all the Supreme Court's supposed to do is read what the Constitution says and enforce it. But when somebody like Sonia Sotomayor says, well, I believe a Latino woman can give a better ruling than a white male, doesn't that say something right there about the fact that she doesn't give a rat's behind what the Constitution says?
Well, and that's part of the problem. But it's as you said, it's something that has happened over time. And I'll be posting something on Facebook pretty soon just about what has happened in my lifetime and how this is not the country that the greatest generation lived in, as we talk about the people that lived in World War II and served. Things have changed. You said it. The times, they are a change. They've done changed. And so now we're stuck with what we have. And some of the stats you gave, 47% of the people, thinking that socialism is good and these kind of things, those are all signs of the times. We're not, this is not your grandfather's America.
No, it is not.
So we will see what happens, but I'm very frustrated with it, and I will have to vote for. It's not only the lesser of two evils, but what I've had to do over the last several elections is vote for the person that agrees with me on enough points that has a chance of actually getting elected.
And as a pastor, Jim, please do something to your bleeding heart Christian congregation, and I'm using C in the church. It's a capital C. I don't mean your congregation specifically, but good grief, when Romney was running against Obama in the last election, and granted, Romney he raised a miserable campaign, but I met Christians saying, "No way, I'm going to vote for a Mormon. No way. You know what Mormons believe?" I said, "Look, what do you want? A guy who believes he's going to become a god someday, or the president we already have who thinks he's God already? Sometimes it's the lesser of two evils."
Yeah, and you know what? I kind of throw the whole, whatever the religious pretense or whatever their profession is. I remember, I'm old enough to remember voting in 1976, and I had friends that said, well,
Jimmy Carter,
Jimmy Carter, he's a Christian.
First Christian to ever use the word born again. He was one of the most miserable.
I know it is sad because
of Obama, I can no longer call Jimmy Carter the worst president we ever had anymore. That is sad that I can't say that.
Well,
he was horrible, and maybe he is born again, but it didn't affect his presidency any.
No.
All right. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others, sadly, do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Jim Barrier, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Let me do a few things in order here. That was the great Alan Price playing organ in House of the Rising Sun by the Animals.
There you go.
Being the lead singer.
And then the one we're doing right now is a little bit of a contrast to that.
A little bit of a contrast, yeah. You love the Hollywood music, don't you? And all that.
Well, I love soundtracks and 60s and Irish. I love Irish music. There's a lot of Irish music we play on this show too. So,
well, I like Van Morrison. He's Irish, and I kind of like Bono. He's Irish. I don't listen to a lot of U2 just because it's not my era and it's not my favorite music. But I have to say, I give Bono the edge over John Lennon in that John just ranted and raved and sang songs. Bono actually goes out and does something, so I'll give him credit for this. So there's some Irishmen I like. Okay, so secondly, Skyline Wesleyan Church, The first church I ever attended, and it was through people at Skyline that I became a believer in Jesus Christ. And so, and I was baptized at a youth camp in the Skyline youth group. And so I have some very, very fond memories and deep roots right there at Skyline. Great church.
They are a good church. I've had a wonderful association with them.
Yeah, it's a good place. Now, and one more plug. I have read Push the Winds Around. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, bless your heart.
And I wrote a review. I use a pseudonym when I write reviews, but I'm Dr. No.
K-N-O. Yes, Dr. No. A little bit of James Bond, except you spelled it differently. It was the K-A-N-O-W, no.
Yeah, well, it's a nickname because my friends, because I'm the trivia guy, the go-to guy when... You know, so people call me and say, who sang this song or what was that? You know, so it became...
Well, you've been paying me handsome compliments. I have to thank you because when you reviewed my children's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, you compared me to C.S. Lewis. And my science fiction novel, you compared to H.G. Wells. I'm not very deserving of that kind of praise, but it was awfully nice of you and awfully encouraging of you.
Well, as a point of reference, and I grew up reading all of that stuff. I read everything... by H.G. Wells and George Orwell and Jules Verne and the visionaries of 100 years before my time. And, you know, so that's the stuff that I really began to...
Well, they were absolutely brilliant writers.
Yeah, great stuff. So for me, that's the classic sci-fi stuff. And I love the whole concept of time travel.
Me too. Those were always my favorite movies and television shows, The Time Tunnel and... Back to the Future, and and of course, H.G. Wells' The Time Machine was wonderful.
Yeah, it was awesome, and I saw some similarities in that because of the dealing with morals and metaphysics and the consequences of your actions and all of those things. Of course, it was I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't read the book, but rather than going to the future. Your time traveler goes to the past, and that's all I'm going to say.
Well, we even say that on the back cover of the book, so that much is given in the tease.
But the similarities in the choice-making is really a thing, and that's really what I wanted to talk about tonight, but we're going to run out of time. But the whole notion of is everything fixed, or are there different potential possibilities? Do our choices actually make a difference, or is it just some cosmic game where we aren't really making choices? We don't really have free will. Everything is Allah's will. I wanted to talk about that a little bit, but I don't know if we have time to go in depth about that.
Well, let's go ahead and start it, and we'll have you on the show again real soon, and we can continue.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good. I wanted to talk about the Oscars.
Okay. Well... Yeah, you pick a topic, any topic. Well, go ahead. Continuum or the Oscars. I'll go with either one here.
Well, my boycott, you know, I boycotted the Oscars.
No, I didn't know that. How come?
Well, because...
Well, they're all idiots, but what's your other reason?
There was no diversity. I didn't see any Christian...
Oh,
movies.
I see. Yeah,
I didn't see any Christian actors being nominated for... best actor, and I think there needs to be diversity.
Isn't it nuts? There's been so many times African American actors have won, and then, or if they get nominated and they didn't win, and it was racism. But then you go, well, then how do you explain all the people that people don't even understand how the Academy Awards work. Only actors can nominate actors, and then anybody, even somebody who builds sets, can vote for the best picture of the year or vote for the best actor. So people just don't even understand how that thing works.
Yeah, it's goofy, but people love the spin. So when some celebrity comes out and makes a big fuss, everybody gets excited. And the truth is, I don't know that there were any movies in the past year that have been nominated for anything significant that I even cared about. I liked the Star Wars movie, and I liked the James Bond movie, and, you know, all that stuff. Those things never get awards, you know.
Well, you know what's really ironic is sometimes the most groundbreaking movies and television shows that deal with the subject of race get banished later. For example, a lot of libraries have banned Huck Finn because it uses the N-word. Well, that was the way people talked in those days, and I wouldn't want to see people talking that way today. But Mark Twain was writing an anti-slavery novel.
He
was speaking against racism in the most profound way by doing it as a little boy who was raised in a racist culture, who was helping a slave escape because that's what his conscience was telling him to do, his conscience from God. Yeah. And yet there was this false artificial conscience from society that was telling him it was wrong to help a slave escape. So here he is on the Mississippi thinking about what he's doing. And it's a brilliant enough. And then you go back to Walt Disney's Song of the South. With the exception of Haiti McDonald, who won the Academy Award for Gone with the Wind, this was the first time an African-American had won an Oscar, albeit it was an honorary Oscar, for the part of Uncle Remus. But now they've banned that movie, and even Disney won't put it out on DVD, except in Europe, but not in America, because it's not politically correct enough because of allegations about racism that really don't even stand up. And I've seen that movie, and it's not racist. It was an anti-racist message way ahead of its time. These things, look at All in the Family, first sitcom to ever talk about racism. Now they could show repeats of it today because it's been grandfather clause, but if somebody came up with something very much like it under a different name, you wouldn't be able to have an Archie Bunker on TV talking that way.
That's where we've gone. And I mean, you know, when a person can be fired because they use the term niggardly, which means stingy and has nothing to do with race. And I think it was Charlton Heston who said it's either because people are too ignorant to understand the language or too lazy to look the word up. So it's just gone bonkers with this whole political correctness
thing. Well, it has. And I remember Charlton Heston used to say, I used to protest racism in Hollywood before it became fashionable to do so. All right. Hang with me for one more segment, my friend.
Okay. All right.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Jim Barrier, welcome to our final segment of the show. So I guess you went with the Academy Awards rather than the time continuum or what was behind the curtain where Carol Merrill was standing.
I don't know, but I could have swore I saw some chariots go by a minute ago. But,
well, that one was Ben-Hur. You know, the last one was West Side Story, but the commercial a couple of weeks ago, you guessed Ben-Hur when it was Lawrence of Arabia, but this time it was Ben-Hur.
Well, they're both equally moving pieces of music. Do you like the music from Last of the Mohicans? That had some Irish folk.
You know, I still have not. You mean the most recent version of it? I have not seen it. If it is Irish, I probably would like it. Do you know the composer's name?
Daniel Day-Lewis won.
Then I'm not placing other things that he's done. But anyway, if it's Irish, I'm sure I'll love it. They had a great Irish soundtrack in many pieces of the movie Wyatt Earp, which that's one of my favorite soundtracks.
Well, just, you know, go to Netflix or wherever you get your old movies and watch Last of the Mohicans. That's an enjoyable film. I don't know if it's completely true to the book. I think the book is maybe a little more graphic, but it has some great music and it has some great scenes and some very memorable things for me. And one of my favorite American Indian Native American actors, Wes Studi is in it. I love that guy. Okay, so we're all over the place here today, Bob.
Why should today be different from any other day?
Why should it? Why indeed? One of my hobby horses is the whole thing of free will, predestination, determination, foreknowledge, all of those things that kind of get wrapped up. I'm really not a classic Calvinist. If you take the five classic points of Calvinism, I'm probably 180 degrees the opposite direction on those things. But where are you at on that? Because in the book...
Actually, if you let me make a shameless plug, we're going to be broadcasting a debate that I did a couple of years ago with a Calvinist on next week's program. So be interested to hear you. It'll be me and a pastor, very cordial, very congenial. But he's a Calvinist, and I'm not quite an Arminian. I'm actually a one point and several halves into Calvinism. But I do vehemently believe we have free will because that's made abundantly clear in the scriptures.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm gonna send you some ammo, some things that I actually had written down that I was going to share tonight. But one of the things is that the dozens of times in the Old Testament where God changes his mind.
That's right. So if it isn't even predetermined enough for God, why is it all that predetermined for us?
And two of them, I'll make it real brief, but two of the greatest stories, one is in Genesis 22, where Abraham takes Isaac, his son, up. God tells him to sacrifice him. And then we have this situation where the angel of the Lord, which almost all the time is considered to be a theophany.
A theophany of Christ, yes.
And Abraham's ready to slay his son, and he says, stop. Now I know. Not like I always knew what you were going to do, Abe. It's now I know you won't hold back. And that one's pretty dramatic. You have Hezekiah who is going to, God tells him, get your house in order, and Hezekiah prays and seeks the Lord. And he says,
and then
okay,
God gives him like another 14 or so years.
15 years to his life. And then my favorite story in the Old Testament, Jonah. God says unequivocally, go down to Nineveh, tell them 40 days, and you're going to be overthrown. It's over.
Without any conditional word if, just you will be overthrown.
No, he doesn't say.
He doesn't say if, but then the people of Nineveh all on their own repent anyway.
Yeah, and then so then it says these are remarkable words. It says then God repented. And, of course, Jonah got, tweaked about that because it made him look bad. But, there's just countless stories. Moses intercedes for Israel. God says, step aside, I'm going to wipe them out. And says, if you're going to take them, take me too. And there's just story after story where you see God changing his mind and kind of interacting with his created beings. And it's a hobby.
Well, you know what? If for any of you who believe in free will, and the theological term is usually Arminian, If you want a fun discussion with your Calvinist friend, just walk up to him and say, according to your theology, it is God's will that I'm an Arminian because I could not possibly have made that choice for myself.
You know what? That's a great line. It reminds me of a thing. It'll be my last thing to say tonight, probably. But we had an interesting morning in our church this morning. We had some kids that God's been dealing with, and they've been saved out of some pretty rough background. And one of the young men got up and he shared the story, and it was why did God make atheists? And it was a great exchange, supposedly between a professor and a student. And the student said, "Why did God make atheists if everything is created?" For God's pleasure and glory. And the response was, because the atheist shows us why compassion and kindness is important. Because an atheist will do a good act, without any thought of reward from God or fear of punishment from God, but because he knows it's the right thing to do.
Right, and yet ironically, his conscience telling him it's the right thing to do. If he were to ask where that conscience came from, it would be a great argument for the existence of God.
Oh, I've had that conversation before. It's interesting. But he said, so next time you see somebody in need, act like an atheist and pretend like there's not a God who's going to fix their problem, and you go help them.
I agree. Yeah, I absolutely agree. When we as Christians go around saying you should do the right thing because otherwise you're going to go to hell, you know, hell and heaven, those are consequences of our decisions. But we do the right thing because our conscience tells us it's the right thing. Because if we want to get metaphysical and ask where the conscience came from, that's another discussion. But on that level, what was the old saying? To do good for the sake of good is good.
That's good. Yeah, I've got a good friend. He's an atheist. He's a psychiatrist. In fact, he travels around the country and lectures other psychiatrists. He's a very smart guy.
Well, you got to have him read my book. He's in my book.
Yeah. I offer, and he's not an open-minded atheist. At the first conversation we had, he knew what was coming because our mutual friend had kind of set us both up for the thing. And I said, I have a question. He said, what's that? I said, if we're the top of the chain, if we're the best, if we've evolved as far as we can go, how come we're not morally better?
Yeah, and even though we're not morally better, how come we have this conscience which keeps telling us to behave in ways that we don't behave? That's one of the greatest arguments that it comes from something outside of ourselves.
You know what his answer was?
What?
That's a good question.
Well, at least, give him credit, because he was at least open-minded and had enough integrity to acknowledge that.
Yeah. We have good conversations, and he's content to stay in his world of, and this is what I think, Bob. I think an awful lot of the people that I know that are atheists, it really is an issue of, because if I happen to open the door to an all powerful, all-knowing being, I'm going to be morally accountable, and I'm not willing to pay that price.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm glad you have so many friends with atheists. I think you're going to get to heaven and see a lot of them there, and they're going to say, Jim Barrier was a friend to me without conditions. He was a fun guy. He didn't always have to thump the Bible. He talked about sports. He talked about movies. He was somebody I could count on. I think God's used you a lot, my friend. I think you're going to see a lot of your atheist friends in heaven, and obviously, Christ gets the glory, but I believe that you have a lot to do with it, too.
I hope so. And I hope even some of the Republicans and Democrats are going to get in.
What was it Billy Graham said? When we get to heaven, we're going to be surprised at two things. We're going to be surprised at who's there, and we're going to be surprised at who's not there.
Yeah, and there will be people surprised to see me there, no doubt.
I've already experienced that. Somebody I went to high school with, I was going to a big church in San Jose, the First Baptist Church. The night I got baptized, this girl walks up to me. She goes, Bob Siegel? Bob Siegel? Yeah. You're the last person I ever would have expected to see here. So I think that's a kind of a taste of the experience we're going to have up in heaven.
And I learned a long time ago to not write anybody off. I had a friend one time, and he was just so antagonistic. And I said, so-and-so, said his name, is the last person on the earth that's ever going to get saved. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, my doorbell rang. I get up and I go to the door, and here's this guy who I had just written off for eternity with a Bible under his arm and a big smile on his face. And he said, guess what?
That's true. Yeah, that reminds me. There was a woman in college that she used to argue with me all the time. This was after I became a Christian. One day she walks up to me. She goes, well, now you're going to have to put up with me for the rest of eternity. That's how she announced her conversion. All right, my good friend, it's always such a pleasure to have you. We'll have you on again next month. By that time, we'll see who won some of those boycotted Academy Awards.
All right, we'll talk about it.
All right, Jim, have a good evening.
All right, thanks.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.